Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 12 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the markets are trying to figure out whether they should top or bottom. We'll try to divine which direction they'll go in the near future today on Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio to help us make those decisions includes Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. In the second half of the program, we'll talk with Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading from Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Always remember that you can visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. Well, let's begin our conversation with this question. As we started out, I have some analysts on the air, Pete Manhart, who feel friendly, some who feel bearish, and some who want to wait it out. Which camp, at least for new crop corn, might you be in?
On new crop corn, I'm looking at protecting the bottom side in case we do have great weather and push it down to that 450 level.
And Jackie Vakes?
I am very much in that same camp, especially after yesterday's report. When you look at the deviation that was on that thing, it was just amazing. The production number deviation is 20.4%. In other words, we could be as high as 16.8 billion bushel crop, as low as 11.1. You can see where you could find either camp. I personally think that we could go lower now, and then as we get into the fall and actually see what's out there, then try to rally. But the question will be from where.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, I'm going to take the opposite point of view. I guess I want to be a little friendly just to be a contrarian, I guess. I do understand the fundamental situation that if we would raise the crop, what USDA did pencil out, we've got ourselves into a pretty large carryover situation that may be kind of hard to climb our way out of. But a couple things. Number one, the market did close higher this week. We did have a reversal to the upside on a weekly basis. And you very rarely have a reversal up after the first full week in July. So I think it's trying to make a stand here until we have a little better idea of what actually size of crop we're going to have out there. We do have some weather issues. The weather maps are not clear-cut one way or the other. It does look like the eastern half of the Corn Belt is going to get some rain, but it looks like the western half of the Corn Belt is going to come up on the short side, and we're going to see some heat in the forecast over the next couple of weeks. And then I think we're going to see some acreage changes to the downside as we go into the August report. So I'm kind of in the opinion that the market needs some time yet to sort it out, whether or not it does want to go on down to the $4 level or if it's going to want to try to make a stand here above the $5 mark.
Jackie, can you take me through the fundamentals that would suggest a lower market for new crop corn?
Well, when you look at the fact, even yesterday, you know, they took out 50 million bushels again of feed usage and 50 million out of exports. I think the biggest thing that argues for a temporary, at least, lower market is that they had added 1.8 billion. Now we're down to about 1.525 billion bushels to demand, just to be able to hold us. And I mean, when you're looking at a carryout yesterday that's at 1.959, we have to have a significant loss in yield to be able to get us to below a billion bushels. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people are going to look at. You know, when you talk about fundamentals, that's the fundamental argument. And yet we've seen China come in now and buy some corn. And so, you know, the thing we all know is if the price goes lower, like we expect it probably will, we should be able to push up some exports. But, you know, when you look at $700 million this last year, we still have $550 million extra exports we have to pull out. And so, you know, I'm just basically trying to look at the bigger picture. It isn't nice because we know that the USDA can make adjustments just like they did this week.
Also added to that, they have an awful lot of feed usage out there, and we have low numbers of cattle. But I think the big thing that I look at is the rest of the world is growing a bigger crop this year. South America, that corn crop is going to start competing against us and be there all fall. And Europe, Ukraine, Russia, all with a pretty much better crop than last year, and even India and Australia with more wheat and China maybe. But what you were talking about China buying, they do need to replace a lot, and if it goes low enough, they will make that export number maybe come true, but it's awfully big right now, that number.
By the way, in Chicago for the week, July corn this week topped out at $8. It did that on Friday afternoon. It was a real rush to the top there. A low at 684, so a very wide range. Settlement price for July corn at 701.5 was up 16.75 on the week. December corn at $5.09 finished 18 cents higher on the week. Dan, I know when we talked on Thursday, you said it doesn't have to be about the big crop. We could have the big crop and there could be some outside influences. I think we talked about the potential for maybe inflation. Maybe the Chinese purchases are another thing. What kinds of things are you looking at that tells you that your charts can point higher?
Well, I think currently in USDA's export demand projection on corn, I think they got China penciled in or in the world market somewhere around 7 million tons of corn. Actually, I think China is going to be a buyer of 10 million tons of corn, and that might even be a little larger. They're going to be a much bigger buyer of wheat. You know, they picked up 1.3 million tons of wheat a week ago. They picked up 1.4 million tons here today or this week. They're in the process of filling their reserves, and then they're still going to be wanting to buy for actual usage. So I think demand may end up being much larger than what everybody thinks. Number two, the monetary policy, it's just you can just see how everybody whines and moans as soon as Bernanke talks about maybe giving the senior citizens a little higher interest rate on their savings account rather than a half a point. He's talking about maybe giving them 3 or 4 or 5 points, and how everybody whines and moans that that's going to be bearish to the stock market, it's going to be bearish to the housing market, it's going to be bearish to the economy, and it's going to slow it down. So he had to kind of backtrack a little bit yesterday and make the statement that we still need to continue with accommodative type easing policy. The dollar lost half of its advance there during the month of June. Now it just stabilized a little bit here today, but I think the dollar, if we're going to continue to quantitative easing, I think the dollar will begin to weaken, and then that may make us more competitive in the world market. Crude oil is over $100. There's a lot of different things that can kind of come along here and keep these prices much higher than what everybody wants to take them to.
I want to go to the 2014 corn crop from this point forward, because normally I would not do it this early in the season, but normally this early in the year, I would not hear Daryl Good from the U of I talk about potentially hedging new crop corn sales. Pete, is there a good reason to do that?
Well, they're 20 to 25 above, this year's crop, and that's usually not the case. So if we grow a good crop this year and have a $1.8 billion carry out and then have another $1.8 billion next year, that could really push things a lot lower. And the crop insurance price next February could be, you know, $450, $480, and then what's your coverage? So, you know, I've got guys that are doing that right now, selling part of the 14 crop now at, you know, we got to five, I think almost 550 this week on it. 548, I think, was maybe the high, but and it's 20, 25 higher than this year's crop, and that's usually not the case.
Jackie Vex, you're doing the same thing?
Definitely been doing option strategies. And, you know, that's one thing I'd like to clarify, I guess, when, you know, when we talk about positioning and we talk about being bearish or being bullish or whatever you might want to call it, we're doing everything in options at this point in time because we know that there are wild cards out there that can send this market higher. And at the same time, we recognize risk to the downside. And, you know, Dan was just talking about a bunch of reasons that could go higher. There's another reason out there, too. We've got a record short from the managed funds in the corn market, which we know could send us higher. And, you know, that those would be great opportunities to be able to do some hedging if we wanted to do it or make some sales. But 2014, I think, is really the big thing. You know, Pete just talked about having crop insurance numbers down in the $4 level. Well, what happens when we start to have that happen? We're not going to see the reduction in corn acres that we normally would see with lower price levels, because those lower price levels, even at that level, are not that low. And so, you know, if we have a fortunate situation where we come in with a big enough crop this year, it really does put pressure on next year's, unless we can zip up the exports. And, you know, you talked about exports, Dan. One of the things that I thought was really amazing on this particular report, they had a 49% deviation on exports. So they certainly are concerned about, you know, China maybe coming in on corn, too. We could have 1.8 billion bushels on the top side or 637 million on the downside. So the deviation is just huge. And I think it just speaks to the fact, like the rest of us, we don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, you have to manage your risk both to the upside and the downside.
Dan, when you take a look out to 2014 and the crop year then, the harvest time, December, what does your cyclical work tell you about that year?
Well, I really can't get super bearish until about 15. I think 15 is when you can probably be bearish, because that's when we're kind of due for a 5.5 year or 6 year type cycle low coming off of 2010. So 14, I'm not, you know, I think 14 could be a downtrending market, but I think between now and then we're going to have a bubble up in here. Actually, I'm kind of looking at the short term here. I think we could be making a 3.5 year type cycle low, and we could probably maybe take this thing higher into the fall and winter months, and then maybe go down into 14, 15. But I got some cyclical work that tells me that the door is at least open for some to go against the conventional wisdom, at least for right now, and that's kind of what I'm waiting on to see whether or not that door is going to open up or not.
Some other numbers from the CME Group from Chicago this week. July wheat settled at $6.75.5. It was up 19.5 cents. Soybeans, July contract, the 1630 top, bottom at 1534.5. A settlement price there at 1563.25. Finished down 24.75. It had an outside down week. November beans, Dan Zwicker, had an outside up week and settled at 1257.25, up 29 cents. Not a lot of time left, but maybe each of you can talk just a bit about your feelings on the bean market. We'll start with you, Dan.
Beans, I think, could be still very explosive to the upside as we go down the road. I'm not convinced we're going to find any more acres in the August report. And I think 44.5 bushel national average yield is very, very rich. And I think you could take USDA's projected carryover, what they came out with there this week at I think 295. That thing could be cut in half immediately, very quickly. We could be back to 100. Actually, I think beans, when you look at the corn-soybean ratio, beans are still in position to gain on corn in the long run. So I guess I would be much more friendlier to the soybean market than I would be corn.
I would agree with that, being more friendly to the beans. I think the acres, when they really find out what's out there, we've seen the highest acre numbers besides on corn, also on beans. I mean, there's a lot of wheat that was harvested late that they didn't put beans after it. So I think that number is high, and I agree that that acreage yield per acre is awfully high, and there's still an awful lot of usage out there on beans.
And Jackie.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. I've been bullish beans for a while, and especially when you look at the beans and the time that they've been planted in the Minnesota and the Iowa areas. You know, beans are so different from corn because they mature according to sunlight. And so some of those beans, you know, they get about 60 days to get everything under their belt and get done. And so it, I just think that there's a lot of opportunity out there for beans to go higher.
We'll be back in just 2 minutes, and we'll talk with Jim Bauer.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. After a cool 4th of July, hot and humid weather returned this week. We finished the week 1 degree above average across the state. Rainfall was widespread and ranged from half an inch to an inch across the region. In the last 30 days, most of the state had significant rainfall. Amounts were 1 to 4 inches above average across southern Illinois, south of Interstate 72, and north of Interstate 80. The only dry spot in the state was in the west, with the Quincy area 1 inch below average. Overall, the Corn Belt looks much better this year. Wetter than average conditions prevailed in the last 30 days from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. However, drier than average conditions prevail across much of Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota. According to the National Weather Service, the warm, humid weather should continue for the next week. Highs on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday will be in the mid to upper 80s. By Tuesday and Wednesday, we should see the low 90s. Overnight lows will climb through the week, starting in the low to mid 60s on the weekend, and get into the upper 60s and low 70s by Wednesday. These higher nighttime temperatures reflect the fact that humidity levels will be climbing through the week. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the July 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio with us include Pete Manhart, and on the phone lines, Jackie Vakes and Dan Zwicker. Jim Bauer is at Bauer Trading. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, and takes a wide-ranging look at the global marketplace. In the front part of this program, Jim, we talked about China, we talked about other parts of the world, and I'm wondering how you see the demand situation for corn in 2013 developing.
Well, I think if we go to a lower price, obviously lower prices tend to stimulate demand. I think the thing that's the most interesting point to me right now in the global marketplace is China's continued interest not only to replenish, but it also looks to me like they're restocking. I thought their recent acquisitions of wheat and to a lesser degree corn were important because that's a tip-off that even though crops seem to be relatively in good shape, they're still buying.
What do you look at world production compared to a year ago?
Well, I think the Northern Hemisphere, the jury is still out. I'm sure you've talked about that on the program in the recent weeks. Obviously, we have situations where the eastern half of the United States is faring pretty well. I haven't even hit 90 degrees at my home in Indianapolis yet this year. We were, I think, 8.5 inches total of precip here in just in the last 4 or 5 weeks. So we've had a real good situation there. But then on the other hand, as you know, I have clients out west, and we have customers in Kansas and parts of southwest Iowa that are just about ready to abandon significant acreage. So what I'm doing at Bauer Trading is basically going by case, individual operation by individual operation. I'm not laying out a general marketing plan. I'm really forced to have my staff and I work with them on an individual basis, and much less marketing using the board last year than I did this year, and using a lot more cash-type contracts and cash situations depending upon what their own individual condition is.
Jim, when you look at South America and you look at the increase that we saw in acreage down there this year, what do you see in the future for them if the prices do go lower?
Well, I still think the bright spot in Brazil, even over all the trouble they've had in the recent weeks, I think that's part of their growing pains. And that's part of being an emerging market. And as you know, growth rates have slowed there. But ag is still the shining star inside Brazil. I think, you know, you always have to monitor just exactly what's happened from a port standpoint. And certainly they have some congestion issues that need to be taken care of. But they're still on the march. They've shown me over the years that they're really very innovative. They're very good at technology. Their young people are quite interested in agriculture, developing careers. And, of course, they keep opening up new lands for available markets. But the big thing that they've got to really improve on is infrastructure, particularly loading facilities, navigational system, and rail. And I think the government is really looking at that, but of course you just don't flip a switch and that takes years, decades to overcome. But I see Brazil still as a shining spot in agriculture.
Jim, since you do have a clientele base spread across the Corn Belt, what's your gut reaction, I guess, to what size of crop do you think we have out there?
Well, I think the next 10 to 12 days are quite important. As you know, the market broke today off a forecast calling for pretty significant rains to come into that southwest quadrant of the Corn Belt between July 19th and July 21st. If that actually validates and actually occurs and they can get 1 to 2 inches of rain in there, that's going to be a huge component of the difference between having a great crop or having a very poor one. So that's going to have to be watched. And then, of course, they're calling for cooling temperatures throughout most of the Corn Belt from July 19th to the 25th. That also has to validate, however, but that would be very opportune for corn production. So I don't take issue with the government's number that they released yesterday with the size of the crop. But, again, I think that time frame, that scheduled rain, the 19th to the 21st, is a very important feature of the market this year.
Jim, have you yet started having conversations with your clientele about the 2014 crop?
No, to be honest with you, we're having a work overload. Actually, as I said earlier, trying to work with each individual customer on a case-by-case basis. I think a lot of this crop is going to go to the bin. I think the basis situations, even though they've been pretty erratic and pretty wild this spring and early summer, I think that's probably going to continue on. And I'm actually doing more speculative trades than I am actual marketing because I'm forced at this situation where last year you could kind of blanket market the whole thing because everybody was kind of in the same shape and the market kind of had a flow to it. But this market now, there's so many different situations all the way from South Texas, which, as you know, hasn't improved at all, up through Kansas, which is in trouble, over towards Indianapolis and Columbus, Ohio, which if we can get 1 or 2 more good rains, we could easily have a record crop. So, again, when you're a broker and you're a manager, you're a marketer, you're an analyst person, you really have got to work this year, I think, on a case-by-case basis and try to determine what's the very best strategy for that individual operation. I don't think you can blanket market this program this year.
How about the wheat crop worldwide and here in the U.S.? Is that going to push wheat higher?
I've had a real beef with the USDA, and I'm still complaining about it. I still can't quite understand how they've kept the crop condition rating so low ever since the 1st of March all the way through the growing season for the hard red winter wheat crop. And essentially, they've actually bumped up the yield almost to the same level as was last year, even though we've been running, 23% behind on the good to excellent rating. So I think the government is still overestimating the hard red winter wheat crop. But I thought one of the most noteworthy items in yesterday's report was that 2013-2014 projected U.S. ending wheat stocks at 576 million bushels. They were looking for 632 million. So that tells me that wheat probably has a little bit brighter picture in the export market and possibly the usage factor. But again, I really would like to see the USDA explain to me a little bit more detail how they're coming up with their numbers for yield on hard red winter wheat. I think they're off.
Jim, when we just finished July's futures contract, and now we're headed to September in corn, and the expectation, of course, is that we're going to go higher. Do you have any thoughts as far as what may happen with the September contract?
Well, when you look at that 2012-2013 projected U.S. ending stocks of soybeans at 125 million, that's still a really low number. That's almost a little bit scary. 2012-2013 projected U.S. ending stocks of corn at 729 million. That's pretty much in line with the trade expectations. But I still think the old crop soybeans are still the linchpin for both corn pricing and wheat pricing out ahead. So, again, the critical time for soybeans is in the month of August. So what I'm trying to relate to you in answer to your question, I still think this old crop soybean situation remains very tight, and it will guide or it will be the linchpin for the discovery in new crop pricing for corn, beans, and wheat, depending upon what this old crop soybean situation finally settles itself out at. But there's virtually very little, if any, beans available, old crop, and I think it's going to be a pretty volatile market as we go into the last 2 weeks of July, first 3 weeks of August, recognizing that August is the critical month for yield determination in the northern hemisphere for soybeans. So, again, old crop soybeans lead either way.
Dan, you have a question again for him? Oh, well, Dan was traveling on I-10 towards Texas. He must be gone. So explain to me exactly why it is old crop is going to, when it disappears, it'll be gone. But why is it going to have such a long-term impact, I guess that's what you're telling me, on new crop prices?
Well, maybe I want to rephrase that just a little bit. Maybe long-term is the two words I want to take out, but I think short-term, doesn't it kind of make common sense that if you've got 125 million bushel carryout on soybeans, and we don't know the yield on soybeans at all yet, where there's no way you would know that. I think that's the guiding or the directional market that's got to be watched the closest to give you a tip which way the other markets are going to go, because we can ill afford to have any kind of yield reduction. Remember now, in yesterday's report, the government's got the soybean yield, what, at or near all-time record. And I don't know how you come up with that. I don't think conditions are at all-time record at the present time. They may end up being that way. But I think there's a lot of play on that yield situation, particularly since we don't know how many prevent plant acres we got. We don't have a real solid idea of what's going to happen with the double crop beans. We've been having a lot of trouble getting some of this soft red winter wheat out. We've been having issues with some of the beans that were planted late. And again, I think the government's pretty stretching the envelope pretty hard, saying that we've got essentially a record yield on soybeans already. I think that's still a big question.
Jim, thank you so much.
Jim, hey, have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Jim Bauer is with Bauer Trading. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. A quick final word from the panelists still with us. We'll start with you, Jackie Vakes.
Well, I think that we go back to the thing we talk about all the time, and that is you have to have yourself prepared for either an up or down in this market. You can hear from what all of us said. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, so just make sure you're protecting your profits and being prepared if the market decides to go the other way.
And Pete Manhart.
Protect against bottom prices, let the top ride open.
Thanks so much to our panelists, Dan Zwicker, Pete Manhart, and Jackie Vakes. I'm Todd Gleason. That's Commodity Week.